I'm probably the only member on the panel that's responsible for Land Management Conservation Agency, so it's probably appropriate I do comment about some of the aspects that this forum's all about. Are big fires inevitable? Well, I think it depends on where you are. In Western Australia, we have responsibility for not only 25 million hectares of national parks, nature reserves, state forests, but also about 88 million hectares of vacant Crown land or unallocated Crown land right throughout the state. And I can tell you that many of those areas, in the remote areas, it's probably going to be, the answer has to be yes at this stage. They are inevitable until we have a lot more resourcing in that area. But when it comes to the southwest, which is really the type of situation we're talking about in this forum, where we have a lot of people, a lot of incidents of fire, a lot of values, we in fact believe that it is not inevitable. In fact, emphatically I say that we can manage the large fires. And so long as the responsibility for fuel management and prescribed burning is taken seriously by the land managers. And that's where I think we have got something to be able to demonstrate. Prior to 1961, high incidence of large fires were prevalent as a result of a sort of partial fire exclusion policy that applied at the time. Following 61, the demise of Dwelling Up and many other little townships, Carradale, the Forest Department in those days took on very vigorously prescribed burning, very vigorously. Since then, it's been declining somewhat, and it reached its bottom around about the late 90s when we were suffering very severe drought. We could have languished about there and said, well, you know, with climate change, which has probably been occurring in West Australia since about 73, as Dr. Nicol indicated earlier, we could have just left it at that. But we felt that if we did not do more about prescribed burning, we were going to end up with the same sort of basket cases that are happening around the rest of the world. And since then, we've taken advantage of increasing our resources to do more prescribed burning, to hire more people in the spring season so they can actually learn to do to apply fire, become more adept at it. And our targets, which are around about 9% of our estate per year that we're aiming to burn, strategically located to protect towns and other values, but also important to reduce the incidence and spread of large fires in the hinterlands, that 9% has been achieved in the last 3 years. Not without difficulty. We have had the drought indications. We've had to burn earlier. I think John indicated winter burning. We've had to take full advantage of any of the windows of opportunities that are available. And the record shows, I think when we did have a very vigorous prescribed burning program, the average losses of forest per year were about 10,000, 15,000 hectares only. We were spending much more on prescribed burning than fire suppression. When we had that decline for about 3 or 4 years in the late 90s, early 2000, we ended up with some bigger fires again. Not mega fires, but big fires. Our mega fires were 25,000 hectares that affected near the Perth Hills suburbs. And it just proved to all of us that once you drop below a certain level of prescribed burning, you're going to have a higher incidence of unmanageable wildfires. So how has that been possible? Well, fuel management is difficult. We've all heard that already today. But it's not impossible, and I think we can prove that. For us to be able to apply fire, though, you need full commitment from the politicians down, from both sides of politics. And I'm in support not only when things are going well, but when you do overachieve, as John indicated, or when you have got smoke coming into Perth, do you do get the support from the politicians and from your senior staff? That's very critical. And we've had support for fire research, for research scientists, for training, for programs to understand about smoke management. That has to be a full package. Prescribed burning isn't the panacea, but it's the cornerstone for good fire management. And it's not just the cornerstone about protection. It's actually very critical for our biodiversity conservation. We are a conservation agency that uses fire to maintain biodiversity. In fact, our logo is fire diversity promotes biodiversity, because that's what our science tells us. A variety of fire regimes are critically important to maintaining the full suite of our biota. But also we talked about water. And an example that Phil Cheney referred to, the Perth Hills fire in January 2005, very large fire that could have consumed the eastern parts of Perth, but for the fact that we had 10 prescribed burns that allowed us to have better options of containing that fire. Without those buffers, we could have had a Canberra because of the conditions that we had at the time. But that also, that fire affected a large segment of the water catchment near Perth, and there've been the studies since then. Gauging stations within the wildfire, gauging stations within the prescribed burn that were done three months earlier. 300 cubic tonnes of silt had to be moved out of the gauging station on three separate occasions. No silt whatsoever in the prescribed burn. Same weather, same situation. So very graphic demonstration of the importance of prescribed burning and protecting soil water turbidity. Not only do you get the impact of wildfires of regeneration, that's going to suck up water for the next 70 to 80 years. So again, it's a big issue for water catchment authorities that we manage with properly planned, properly applied prescribed fire. I just want to quickly, no yellow card yet, talk about climate considerations, because I think that's what's critical to this debate. We have been suffering, if I can put it that way, for at least since 73, 74, according to the data, in the southwest. You saw the graph up there. It looks like it was going to go on for a while yet. So we've had some time to do some adaptation. I already mentioned the fact that we've learned to identify the windows better. And I know there's some people in the audience who believe that we should be doing a lot more, and I'll acknowledge that we're going to have that point of view. But I do believe that we are adapting to it. We've recognised that the windows are narrower. We need to have the resources there to be able to take full advantage of that. We are having problems where our peat lakes are now drying out. We have to make sure that we burn those very early in the spring while there's still some moisture in the system, because we don't, those peat lakes, as we're now seeing around Perth, will burn right down to the bottom, and that's a total change to the environment. So climate has many impacts, not only on drying and fuel and fire behaviour, but also on species and ecology. So we have to be able to adapt. We have to change. Otherwise, we'll have a changed world that none of us want to live in. So thanks very much.